So after we hear about the development of the family of Yaakov Avinu, finally Rachel has a baby. His name is Yosef. Father Jacob wants to return home. He had enough. He worked for 14 years. He fulfilled everything that he was supposed to do, as per Lavan's request. And the Medrash tells us that Devorah, who was kind of Rivka's nanny, older than her, she showed up and she said, "Yaakov, your mother thinks that Esav is, calm enough that you should be able to come home now." And Yaakov wants to go, and especially because Yosef was born, this instilled a great deal of courage within Yaakov. So he tells Lavan, "I'm ready to go." And Lavan says, "Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to let you go. Your coming here has brought me tremendous success. Lots of good things have happened." He said, Yaakov is like, "I've taken care of you. I haven't taken care of me. I got to take care of me. I got to build my own wealth." So Lavan says, "Okay, fine. So name your price. Let's take care of you too." And Yaakov names a price, and Lavan does everything to outwit him and to deceive him. And Yaakov outwits his father-in-law. And the Torah goes through these details of speckled sheep and ringed sheep, and brown sheep and white sheep. And I'm not going to study that with you this morning because it's really hard to try to understand what this means to us in our life today. Everything has meaning, and Chassidus talks about all of these different speckled and spotted and colored sheep and what they mean, and everything has many layers of meaning. But I'm going to take it to the end of the story. So Yaakov Avinu has this remarkable success. And, some people maintain that Gregor Mendel's early experiments could be found within Yaakov Avinu's genetic engineering of a sheep. But the bottom line is that Yaakov says, no problem, he takes on Lavan's challenge. And despite all the odds stacked against him, he does exceptionally well. The Torah kind of sums up all of Yaakov's activities in chapter 31, in verse 43, where it says, "Vayifreitz ha'ish ma'od ma'od." The man became exceedingly prosperous. And even though up until this point, all we've talked about really is sheep, the Torah says now, "Vayihilei tzoin rabbis," he's got lots of sheep. And then the Torah says, "Ushvachis va'avodim," he has indentured laborers who he owns, these people who are essentially bonds people committed to Yaakov. He has gemalim, he's got lots of camels, and he's got chamerim, and he has donkeys. So the obvious question is, for the last 15 or so verses, all we've heard about is sheep. And suddenly, when the Torah gives us the grand finale, kind of tallies it all up, we have lots more than sheep here. There's sheep and there's servants and bondswomen and bondsmen and camels and donkeys. Where did all this come from? So Rashi says, firstly, you should know that when it says tzoin rabbis, that's an anomaly, a grammatical anomaly. It shouldn't have said tzoin rabbis. It should have said tzoin rav. Many sheep should have been tzoin rav. It doesn't say that. It says rabbis. And therefore, it's coming to talk to you about the sheep. It's telling you not only about the quantity, but it also alludes to the quality. And Rashi says that these were not only large numbers of sheep, but they were qualitatively superior sheep. Parois v'rovois, that Yaakov had bred a superior kind, genetic kind of sheep, who were most prolific. In fact, they were parois v'rovois. They increased, they multiplied, yeser mishar hatzoin, more so than most of the other sheep. Uh-huh. So now we know that Yaakov not only has a lot of sheep, he's got superior sheep. And because we have superior sheep, this is going to answer the question for us. So shvachis va'avadim, he's got bondswomen and bondsmen, he's got these people working for him. Where did that come from? So Rashi says, well, naturally, if he has a superior product, then there was demand. People wanted Jacob sheep. And to get Jacob sheep, you had to pay. Yaakov sold this at a high price. So Meicher Tzoinei, not only was he breeding enormous flocks, but he was selling sheep, B'damim Yekarim, at very high prices. V'lekeach lai, and then he was purchasing the business residuals that were necessary to continue to grow his enterprise. Kol Eila, he was buying all these things. So now we know that Yaakov was very successful, and we know that the sheep that he bred were superior, and therefore there was great demand. So Yaakov purchased other things. On the word vayifreitz, so one could simply assume that this is similar to the ufaratzta that we heard about before. He broke beyond the barriers. Maybe this is what Rashi assumes you're going to think, and he doesn't say anything about vayifreitz. Vayifreitz, according to the Eitzar Midrasha, means he pushed the lines of nature. In other words, some of the things Yaakov did just didn't make any sense. The kind of success he experienced was beyond the norm. There's the frame, there's the predicted reality, there's what you could expect, and then Yaakov somehow seemed to have soared way past what everybody expected. And Rashi does tell us previously, in the verses prior, that some of Yaakov's activities involved paranormal activity, like things. Like, not everything was nature. Yaakov did a lot of very clever things. He was very smart. He was very focused. He knew what he was doing in a remarkable way, but he also had help from angels. And some of what happened here was simply miraculous. The Radak says that the word vayifreitz comes from an enormous amount of wealth. That's what it means. There's a lot of money. He says ufaratzta, yama, means that you have so much affluence that you can't spend it in one place. And that's why it gets spent all over the place. It's like a business explodes. And because the business explodes, does so well, invariably it starts to move into other arenas, other areas. So the vayifreitz here indicates that Yaakov went beyond the sheep breeding, beyond being simply a shepherd, but all of a sudden he began to invest in other businesses as well. His business grew beyond the original parameters. So the simple meaning of vayifreitz is he had explosive growth. Radak says, he gives us kind of an inkling as to what happened here with the Avodim and the Shvachais and the Gemalim and the Chamoirim, the various different details that are being mentioned. He says, Yaakov went beyond, Vayifreitz, he went beyond his original business, like some people do very well, and so they go into real estate.
Diversification.
You could call it diversification, but diversification is a cautionary approach to investments. And here we're talking about a business that does so well that invariably there's money to invest elsewhere. So somebody could start off as having a chain of stores, but the chain of stores does so well, all of a sudden he invests in real estate and he invests in manufacturing and does other things as well. So Yaakov kind of went beyond the original frame, which was he was a shepherd. Now Yaakov was beyond that and he's a big businessman. He's doing big business. The Sefarno says that he went beyond any predicted norm. Whatever he did went beyond. So he has these tzoyin rabbis. He has these extraordinary kinds of sheep that everybody wants to get their hands on. And the interesting thing is there's no mention of cattle. There's no cattle here. He's got sheep. We talk about donkeys. We talk about camels. There's no sheep, no cattle. And that indicates that Yaakov did not get involved in the development of land agriculturally. Because cattle is what you needed. It's like having a tractor. In order to work the land, you need cattle. Yaakov never, ever actually purchased real estate. So everything that he did was business. He was buying and selling. Camels were the equivalent of trucks once upon a time. He was transporting materials. Donkeys also were like these pack animals you could load up. So Yaakov was involved in commerce, but he did not actually get involved in farming. He never became a local, per se. All of his business was something that could be picked up and moved. Well, how does that all go over? Well, it doesn't go over so well. History is replete with the story of the Jew who succeeds and his neighbors who are jealous, even though here they're actually related to him. Yaakov starts to hear murmurings. Yishma'az divrei bnei Lavan. The children of Lavan are saying, Lokach yankev eskala shel avinu. Ha, Jacob, he stole everything that belonged to our father. He stole our wealth. Mashel Avinu, that which belonged to our father, also is called Hakavod Hazeh. That's where he made all this extraordinary honor, or this, so to speak, this heavy wealth. That's how he got so wealthy. That's how he got so successful. This didn't come from his own efforts. This didn't come from his own ingenuity. This didn't come because Yaakov was able to stay one step ahead of the conniving Lavan. No. He exploited us. He took advantage of us. He took our wealth. He stole our wealth. And at this point, Yaakov knows it's time to move. And indeed, Hashem appears to him and says, Yaakov, you got to head home. So let's talk about the specifics of Yaakov's wealth and what we might be able to learn from this in our day and age. So I'm going to direct you to the Biurim book, on page Ayin Tes, Simul Lamed Aleph. The Rebbe begins this analysis of Yaakov's business, specifically the words of Rashi, in which he says he would sell his sheep for a high price and purchase all these other things, these other residuals. We know, this is a theme that's very, very much spoken of, that Maisa of a similar banim, that what happened to the patriarchs is a sign, a guidepost for us. So in that case, if we're reading about Yaakov's business ventures from 37 centuries ago, it's got to in some way have a simon for us. What is the Torah telling us? Should we all be shepherds? Should we try to engineer sheep and then sell them and buy donkeys and camels? And really, what does this mean for people in our day and age? And the first comment that Rebbe makes is, obviously, we're not talking about this in a literal sense, but rather that there is spiritual symbolism that's attached to the animals that Yaakov raised and the kind of business that he did successfully. So the Rebbe says, let's talk about sheep. What do sheep represent in Aveda Ruchnias, in the spiritual service towards Hashem? And he says, sheep were the foundation of Yaakov's business. That's clear, right? Dealt with Lavan. Lavan had sheep, and then Yaakov was in the sheep business. He took care of Lavan's flocks, and then Lavan said, okay, don't go yet. Don't go. We're going to make you some wealth. So what was Yaakov doing? It's all about sheep. We have almost 20 verses that go into the details of the speckled sheep, the spotted sheep, how Yaakov did that. He had these rods that he peeled, and he created these strange colors, and when the sheep went to drink, and how they went to drink, and when they made it. So it's all about sheep. And only here in the sum total, in verse 43, do we hear about other residuals. So sheep, when people think of sheep, what do they think of? What quality do we attribute to sheep?
Followers.
Docile. People say sheep to the slaughter. It's like not thinking on your own, just simply doing what you're told. Usually people see in sheep behavior that is meek and submissive. That's what the sheep represent. Weakness, meekness, submissiveness. On a spiritual level, that means the idea of betelos beratzen hamanhigim, that you dedicate or you commit your own will and desire to the will and desire of the leader. The sheep follows the leader. And wherever the leader takes the sheep go. In fact, most flocks of sheep follow a single sheep. There's a single sheep who's kind of designated as the leader. And the shepherd just has to control one sheep. Because once he controls that one sheep, all the other sheep will necessarily fall into step and follow him. This represents the idea of bittul, b'chinas habittul, a sense of renouncing self and self-abnegation. And this is really, if you will, the aveda, the service of every single yid. A yid is supposed to commit himself to doing what Hashem wants. The meaning of following Hashem and serving Hashem is not that I'll listen to the Torah mitzvahs, I'll analyze them, I'll consider them, if it works for me, if it makes sense to me, well, maybe I might even do it. But that's what I have to decide. That's an evaluation I have to make. It has to be real for me. This is incidentally increasingly the case with many Jews, unfortunately, that they say, if it's meaningful to me. But that was not the foundation of Yiddishkeit ever. Rather, the foundation of everything was, before we got the Torah, was Nase Venishma. We will obey. We are prepared to submit to you, God. Well, also, we want to hear about this. But there's Higdimu Nasal Nishma. The emphasis is that first we accepted, and after we said, of course it's important for us to understand, but that's only secondary. The most important thing is to be willing to follow Hashem. This is known as Kabbalas Oil Malchus Shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven. When it comes to God, being like a sheep to God. So what does Yaakov do? He starts off with sheep, but he doesn't remain with the sheep. He goes bullish. Well, not literally. He has camels and donkeys. But the point is that Yaakov sells some of those sheep and he purchases other things. So the Rebbe suggests that inasmuch as the foundation of a Jew's Aveda has to be submissiveness to Hashem, you also have to acquire other traits as well. In addition to his batlus, And shiflos, in addition to a self-abnegating attitude, in addition to a very humble attitude and a submissive attitude, a yid also requires strength. He requires courage. He requires this confidence, in the words of the Shulchan Aruch, shaloi lehizbayish mipnei bnei adam hamaligim. There will always be people who laugh at you. There will always be people who will seek to put you down. Don't be submissive. Don't be faint-hearted. Don't just give in. They laugh, they mock, and you walk with your head held high. And you have to find the courage and the strength to lehizgaber al yitzrei, to overcome the evil inclination, or whoever might be a representation of that, which is like the idea of overcoming enemies and foes and opposition. Lenatzchei ulahapilei la'aretz. This is in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, to take those, the foes, so to speak, in your growth of Yiddishkeit, and to be able to vanquish them. So this is what Yaakov does then. Yaakov has lots of sheep. He's very submissive to God, but it doesn't remain only Yaakov, the meek and submissive Yaakov. It also becomes Yaakov, the courageous. It becomes Yaakov, the forthright. It becomes Yaakov, the confident. It becomes Yaakov, the strong. And both are true. So we start off with the foundation of sheep, but then there's the kinyan, there's the purchasing or developing of shvachim, avodes, gemalim, and chamayim. Interestingly, it develops, but what remains Yaakov's primary residual? What's his main business still? It's still sheep. So yes, there are other qualities Yaakov eventually kind of develops, but the foundation is still in place. And the foundation has to be the strongest element, because if the foundation collapses, everything collapses. And therefore, proverbially speaking, regardless of how strong a yid must grow, regardless of how confident you have to be, and willing you have to be to stand up for what you believe is right, within, there always has to be an enormous amount of sheep-like commitment and devotion. There always has to be the foundation, which is the nais of a nishma, the commitment to Hashem, the meekness, the willingness to follow. Now the Rebbe adds something very interesting, especially relevant, perhaps, in our time, more so than ever before. Well, I shouldn't say ever, but more so than it's been for a long time. In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov is confronting Esav. And Esav represents the age-old enmity towards the Jewish people. Esav is the original anti-Semite, if you will. I know he was Jewish. That doesn't mean anything. Unfortunately, many anti-Semites have been Jewish over the years. Esav hates Yaakov. The paradigm of the hatred towards Yaakov is often couched in terms of Esav, sona liYaakov. That the progeny of Esav hate and have tremendous angst towards Yaakov. So Esav and Yaakov are going to be meeting, and Yaakov sends a message to him. And very interestingly, the message is Vayhi li shor v'chamor. Now he's talking about oxen, which are not even mentioned in Parshas Vayetze. And then secondary is donkey. And then he mentions sheep only at the end. What's going on here? Yaakov's primary residuals are the sheep, and yet the sheep are only mentioned towards the end. He talks to Esav about bulls, which we never even hear over here. How did he go bullish all of a sudden? Where are the bulls from? Oh, he must have purchased some bulls at some point, because he says to Esav, I got bulls. He sent him bulls as gifts, so clearly he had some bulls. And then he talks about the hardy donkeys. So the Rebbe says, really and truly, my friends, this is very simple. In your personal avodat Hashem, first and foremost has to be your sheep. First and foremost has to be your submissiveness to Hashem, your meekness even, if you will. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going to accept and do with 100% wholehearted devotion. However, there is the Yaakov who has to, so to speak, confront the world around him. A world who seeks to do him in a work, a world who seeks to inundate and overwhelm him, a world who seeks to harm him. And so Yaakov teaches us that when it comes to that world, we should not be projecting sheep. We should be projecting bulls. We should be projecting not only confidence, but strength and the willingness to defend ourselves. And there's a big difference between the way you look at yourself internally, the way you can, so to speak, conduct your life before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the way you conduct your life vis-a-vis the world around you. When it comes to the world around us, we the Jewish people are not interested in being known as weak or submissive, but rather we the Jewish people have a responsibility, like Yaakov, to project strength, resoluteness, courage, and the willingness to stand up and defend ourselves. And this is a lot to think about in today's day and age.